Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network, podcast network for all Big 12 fans, and partners with Sports Drink, your source for all things sports and non-sports, a fantastic podcast network in their own right. I am your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. We've got a loaded show, a packed show, lots to talk about, big games, big news, all sorts of stuff to get to. I have two great people joining me today. One who's here with us every week, the vibes queen herself. That is JSJ, Jamie Steyer Johnson.
Yes, I'm back. I'm here, as I said, for the vibes. I don't have a sports related tab open except for the football game I'm watching, but there's a couple thoughts rattling around up here. But it is indeed mostly vibes.
Jamie, I would be sad if you showed up without vibes. Like I don't.
That's simply not possible.
No, that's a day I'm just like, is Jamie okay? We need to check on her. Andy is out this week. He had an emergency come up. Joining us in his stead, who he was going to be here anyways. Let's call him the new 10-12 stats guru. That is John Wheeler, also known as CFP Resume Rankings on Twitter. John, welcome to the show, man.
I'm excited to be here. Love me some Big 12 football. Love me some stats, data. I'm ready to talk about all of it.
If you could see, as podcasting is a visual medium, the little tab, the little Google Excel spreadsheet that John showed us with all of the insane notes he's put together before we started recording, you'd just be like, oh, well, my goodness. Oh, maybe we'll share it. Maybe we won't. We'll share some of it throughout the week on our Twitter account at 1012 Network. We'll be sharing stuff from John. We have been the last few weeks. That's where we've been getting data for our Big 12 schedule ranking, as well as now we're doing kind of win and loss impact, how much that hurt or helped you, as well as just a few other things. John, do me a favor, just so everyone kind of understands what you do and knows a little bit about you. I know you're a Baylor fan, which is perfect. So we have, you know, got to keep it Big 12 here. No offense to others, like our good friends who do this kind of stuff, like Parker, who's a TCU fan. That's works. That's Big 12. Or Kelly Ford, who, not a Big 12 fan, but he does like the Big 12. I swear, everyone I bring on this show, like our good friend Daniel, who makes picks with us on Thursdays, is like, well, now I really like the Big 12. This is the impact that we have here on the 10-12 Network. I will take as much credit for it as possible. But John already comes in a Big 12 fan as a Baylor fan. John, kind of explain what it is you do in your process so that everybody has a baseline understanding.
Absolutely. So as a base starting point, I'm a data scientist. I work at Lockheed Martin. I do statistical work within the F-35 program for my day job. So I take statistics, a lot of the techniques, the modeling algorithms, approaches I use day-to-day basis at work, and I apply them to college football, which is where my passion is at. I love college football. I love the Big 12. I went to Baylor, and I've been all over the statistical scene for about 5 years now over at CFP Resume Ranks on Twitter. We also have a website that we post all of our data and analysis to. But really what I do is I'm in the business of resume ranking. And there are a lot of people who do resume ranking. You see the fine analytics folks at ESPN, they have resume ranking processes that they use on their FPI data. Kelly Ford does his most deserving rankings, which is a resume ranking system powered by the Kelly Ford rating. There are others who are in the resume ranking business as well. And to do resume ranking, you have to have an underpinning strength rating system to understand how strong each of the teams are so you can appropriately dole out the value of beating a team or of playing against a certain schedule. And what I do differently than most is I don't build my own power rating system or strength rating system. Instead, I leverage a composite rating system. Andrew Percival has a composite rating system. I know CFB Nate has his own six system composite rating that he'll post around on Twitter. So there are others who do composite ratings as well. I kind of combine those two ideas together, the composite strength rating system, where I have about 46 different strength rating systems at play on any given week. And then I leverage that as my underpinning strength rating system to support resume ranking, which is meant to mirror what the CFP committee would be doing as they go and rank teams. There's a reevaluation of the season every given week, which is exactly what the committee is supposed to do. And then there's this composite system, which is meant to help weed out some of the outliers that any one system might have. So you mentioned Parker earlier this week. Well, he's got a rating system at CFB Graphs, I believe, online. And you know, there are definitely some outliers in his rating system. That doesn't devalue a lot of the good ratings that he has, but it's unlikely that Minnesota's the top 10 team, even if that shows up as a top 10 team in his Pythagorean rating system. There are others who have Texas as a top five team, and maybe they've played, you know, SP Plus has Texas really high, and they have played very strong at times this year, but that doesn't mean that that might be an outlier rating. There are still systems that use preseason weighting, you know, the Freemo Efficiency Index, FEI, they have, they've got preseason weighting from, I think last week it was from 18 to 44% of preseason weighting still impacting their strength rating systems. So there are some systems that are slow to respond as games are played. There are other systems, like all the systems they used to use for the BCS rankings, those were meant to not have any preseason influence on the computer rankings. And so they're very quick to respond, and maybe they overreact to the games that are played any given week. And so you kind of get a smattering of these different ideas. There are ELO, SRS rating systems. You get systems based on the efficiency of the games played, systems based on the scoring margins of the games played. And when you kind of put all of these different ideas for how to understand team strength together in a massive composite, you end up with a pretty good understanding of how strong teams actually are. And so that's kind of where I come from. I'm pulling all these different rating systems that each have their own strengths and weaknesses. I'm combining them together. I'm using an Olympic scoring model. So, you know, in the Olympics, you see a swimming, diving competition maybe, or ice skating, acrobatics, whatever. They'll have several different judges and they'll throw out high and low scores as kind of the outliers, and then they'll keep the median scores as representative of how someone performed. Well, I do the same thing. It's as if I got between 38 and 46 judges on a given week of how strong a team is. And then I will throw out high and low judging scores. And what you're left with is a pretty good understanding of how strong a team is. So that gives you a strength rating system that you can go off of, and you can then go and do resume ranking by attributing win value to the games that are played, trying to value head-to-head results when they happen, and piecing that all together in a way that is, for the most part, consistent with how the committee usually goes throughout their ranking process.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's awesome. I love seeing it. You've like walked me through your Excel sheets before, and I'm just like, okay, I don't understand 90% of this, but it looks really cool, and I will try and do my best. But John has been helping us out. We've been posting some graphics, as I mentioned, on Twitter, and we'll continue to do so and continue to try and provide more interesting views on the Big 12, who's helps us also shift our expectations for teams. We want to be as data-driven as possible, and John is really helping us out with that this season and going to continue to do so. And I am thrilled to kind of have you on board as part of the 10-12 team moving forward. Do yourself a favor. You can go to cfpresumerankings.wordpress.com, and you can check out his rankings there. Now, it's kind of all, instead of seeing everything as a big giant spreadsheet, you see it nice line 1 through 131, which is really helpful. John's going to stick around for the show and talk through some stuff with us. We're going to recap this weekend as we always do. But one thing I want to talk about real quick, TV deal for the Big 12. The last we have heard this week, we talked a little bit about it Thursday, but I do want to touch on it a bit today. As we understand, the report from Dennis Dodd would be that if the Big 12 gets what it wants, it'd be a $400 million in its new deal. That's obviously a pretty good number. That would be roughly $33 million per school in the new Big 12. A reminder, last year, Bowlesby said that the Big 12 distributes about $28 million in TV revenue per school, with Oklahoma and Texas accounting for the value of about half of that. Now people are like, well, how can you say it's going to lose value and they're going to get more money? Because TV contracts were all going to be bigger this year. With Oklahoma and Texas leaving, you would have gotten more than $33 million per school if they were sticking around, but you were getting less. But it's still an increase. That is a positive. If those numbers turn out to be accurate, and if this deal gets done in the next few weeks, I know that Brett Yormark continued to say that it will, and I think everyone's in a, look, Brett Yormark is a salesman, and he's going to continue to sell this, and I think he is trying to get a deal done, and I will pay very close attention. I think the biggest takeaway I have at this point, and my biggest thought, is this is not going to be a long-term deal, folks. This will be a short-term deal, and it should be, and it's smart, and here's why. Primarily, we expect this to be a new deal with Fox and ESPN. That would probably keep some stuff on ESPN+, keep predominant Big 12 football and athletics on Fox, Fox Sports, and ESPN and its family of networks. Why do that? We've talked about going all in. You know, there's the conversation about whether the Pac-12 is going to go all in with Apple or all in with Amazon if they can get that deal done. Here's the problem with that. And I think the Big Ten got it on the nose when they made sure that the majority of their TV deals were with NBC, CBS, Fox, putting it on broadcast. And here's why: streaming isn't ready to go all in on. And we could talk about how great the Thursday Night Football numbers are on Amazon, but those numbers are unprecedented. There is nothing in streaming that gets numbers like that on one single night. It's not been seen before. That doesn't mean everyone's going to hop on board with it. That would be a rough idea. It's why the Big Ten, again, streaming's not ready to go all in. It's why the Big Ten's put so much into broadcast TV. More and more people unplug. That is cool, but not everyone has. We've talked about this. The state of West Virginia, internet's not very good there. We have the West Virginia in this conference. It would not be beneficial to fans of West Virginia to go all in and unplug and go streaming. It's going to put... Going all in on digital limits your growth, and that's the biggest thing. Brett Yormark is trying to grow the Big 12 network. We're trying to grow the Big 12 and its brand. The SEC is a brand. It has schools that everybody knows about, but it is a brand. Everyone knows the Big 10 brand. It is a brand. We know Ohio State and Michigan, but we know the Big 10. It was talked about. We mentioned this on Thursday. The comment was, by Yormark, that people know brands in the Big 12, especially in basketball, like Kansas, but then everybody knows that Kansas is in the Big 12, which sounds silly and ridiculous to you and me, but to people who don't pay attention to college athletics, that's not that crazy. To say, I know who Kansas is, I know who I can see the Jayhawk logo and say that's Kansas, and not know that they're in the Big 12, or who else is in the Big 12, because that's just not something that they pay attention to. People know what the SEC is. People know of the SEC. He wants to grow the Big 12 brand. The smartest way to do that is to make sure that the most people possible can continue to see the Big 12, both in football and men's to women's basketball and softball and every other sport that's going on. You want the Big 12 brand to grow before you remotely try and move it somewhere where fewer people are going to see it. Brand growth is very important to Brett Yormark right now. So it makes sense to sign a shorter-term deal with the media partners that you have that gives you an increase and keeps you on broadcast TV. One, that ensures the biggest audience. Like we said, you're still going to have some football games on ESPN Plus and Olympic sports there as well, which is good for the Olympic sports because otherwise they're next to impossible to find unless your school has some sort of YouTube channel you can sign up to, and usually the quality for that is awful. Which means you can work over the next few years to grow the brand and increase the Big 12's value, and it gives you time to properly evaluate how live sports on streaming is going to go. Because, again, we don't know. We have a few Thursday night examples, and some of those are some really bad NFL games. And as had been mentioned, I've read and talked about that Thursday night game, massive numbers in week one. It has decreased each week. So this is still a new thing that we don't know enough about. We don't know what it's going to be like to have an entire conference of college athletics put onto streaming. If you're the first one to do it, you hope it works out. It might not, and that would set you back so far. And you'd be working from even further back to try and grow a brand, especially if no one can watch what you're showing. So it gives you time to evaluate how live sports on streaming is going to go, who is actually in the market, and who is having the most success in that market as well. I know that Brett says there's a new deal coming. There's no deal as far as I'm concerned until it's signed. We'll just hope the next few weeks we find out that there is one that has been signed that is lucrative for the Big 12 and offers it the best opportunity to grow its brand. I think that is the most important thing, is growing the brand. You've got to. Whether that's just getting it hashtag younger, hipper, cooler, or just making sure everybody knows that the University of Kansas is in the Big 12 Conference and also contains Oklahoma State, TCU, Iowa State, West Virginia, Baylor, Kansas and Kansas State, UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, and BYU. And if I missed one, sorry, I was trying to remember them all off the cuff. And sometimes I'm good at that, and sometimes it's Sunday night and I have three kids. You've got to grow the brand. You have to. It's important. So.
Well, and as far as like that particular aspect goes too, I mean, I make no secret of like where most of my priorities lie as far as athletics, as far as conference stuff like that. And so to see that very specifically your mark is saying like, yeah, I have significant interest in like really trying to push our women's sports, really trying to promote them. I mean, from a business aspect, it's, again, that's not a secret that is the way to get ahead of growth, is to recognize where the trends are and to recognize where the potential for growth lives. And so, I mean, aside from TV money and things like that, obviously it can eventually play into that. But to see him come out and say specifically that, yeah, for the record, like, I'm not just talking football brand, is is sadly really nice to see actually said out loud, because that doesn't always happen.
There's a lot that goes into this beyond just like, well, sure, it would be cool. Like, look, it would be cool to be like, yeah, we're on Apple and maybe they give you more money. But if you cannot grow the brand, if you cannot continue to grow the number of people who are going to pay attention and watch what you're selling, like, the value is not there. So I'm fine with sticking with Fox and ESPN, no matter how we view them. I don't care. Let's do it. Okay. Let's talk about this weekend. Let's kick things off with the game, the biggest game of the weekend. It was, well, there's two great ones, but the biggest one obviously is the one that handed Kansas State its first loss in Big 12 play. That is TCU and Kansas State. TCU coming out on top with another double-digit second half comeback in Fort Worth. TCU Horned Frogs remain undefeated, sit atop the conference standings, do not have a loss, and I think after this week have locked themselves into a trip to Arlington. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. I want to talk about Kansas State for a minute. Obviously, Adrian Martinez gets knocked out early. Can we talk about the crazy theory that was being posturized both on Twitter and by Tim Brando himself, that Howard was the plan all along when Martinez was injured last week and was injured all week and was only going to play a little bit? Then the first time he got hit, they were going to put in Will Howard. I'm not sure that I believe that. Enough people brought it up that I was like, okay, well, I guess we'll talk about it. I'm not sure I entirely believe that. It would be some gamemanship. If it was the strategy, it worked for a while. Howard finished the night 13 of 20 for 225 yards and two scores. Kansas State was looking real good. They had a drive to start that third quarter. It ended with a missed field goal, but then Howard got knocked out. And we saw Rubley, who just was not it and was not ready. And TCU is able to mount the comeback. Man, Kansas State, look, injuries happen. But the number of starters and players, they got knocked out in that game. In theory, your first and second string quarterback and a number of other multiple offense and defense starters in that game. Like, I'm not saying that TCU wouldn't have won anyways. But it's not like it doesn't play a part in the outcome. And let me preface anything said about this moving forward. We are not taking away from TCU. TCU is a very good football team. They are winning their games. They're undefeated. They're mounting comebacks. They are good. Like I just said, they're a lock for Arlington. And it's because I do think this is a good team. It's not just luck. It's not just fluke. This is a well-coached team that's having a ton of fun. This is the biggest thing for TCU. They're having fun. Do you guys, TCU. Fun TCU. What is that? I don't remember what that's like. I don't know that in the Big 12 other than just when they were good. Like, TCU brought back the flying T. That was like the logo that shall not be named as far as TCU treated it. And now it's back. And then Sonny Dykes is rocking a Hypno-Toad sweater during practice on Twitter. I'm not used to fun TCU, but I freaking love it. It's awesome. Props to them. They won this game and they are undefeated for a reason. But we cannot sit here and act like injuries do not impact outcomes of games. Of course they do, especially when you're down to your freshman third-string quarterback. So, props to TCU for this win. I don't know if I buy the crazy theory, but here we are.
It's a little out there. Look, I think that there's a pretty wide gap between having some concern and practicing your second stringer more and having a convoluted plan where you're gonna fake everybody out by sending Martinez out there, but then immediately pull him and send in the second string. Like, I get that it affects the game plan, but like, I mean, if he's not ready to play, you're really gonna throw him out there as a sacrifice and say, well, go take a hit, hope it doesn't get worse, and we're doing this for the slight potential game plan advantage. Like, I would hope that's not the case. I would hope that he was not coming in, not ready to play, and being thrown out there as some kind of 4D chess move, because that would be just so beyond irresponsible that I wouldn't even know how to respond to it.
I would know, and I'm pretty sure that's what Matt Campbell did with Brock Purdy in his first game against Oklahoma State, was play a drive and everyone think it not be Purdy, and then Purdy come out and press. No, slightly kidding. Look, it would be very irresponsible to put him out here if he actually was too hurt to go. That's why the theory doesn't hold a lot of water. But enough people kept bringing it up. Like, it's one of those things where you're like, man, that sounds cool. Yeah, that might have been a thing. Like, let's stop for 5 seconds and contemplate if that actually makes any sense. Now, speaking of injuries, we have to have this conversation. TCU is having a run of, I'm going to put air quotes, luck, because luck is when preparation meets opportunity, with opponent injuries. Let's run down this list. In Big 12 play, Jalen Daniels got knocked out against TCU, and Jason Bean had to come in and finish the game. Bean played very well. Daniels wasn't playing all that well in that game, but it did happen. Dylan Gabriel for Oklahoma got knocked out during the game against TCU, and they had to go with the two backups, who are booty and not good. Now, again, TCU was blasting Oklahoma when Dylan Gabriel was in the game anyway, so it's not go too much of that. Spencer Sanders' shoulder has been banged up. He could tell he did not play well. He started the game very strong and then did not play well. Starting center was out for that game as well. But again, TCU, Oklahoma State got the lead. TCU made them come back. And this one, the injuries just continued to mount as the game went on. TCU was able to mount the comeback. Injuries happen. And again, I'm not taking anything away from TCU. Like, they're good. I'm not playing the TCU is dirty card. I saw that tweet. That's stupid. Stop it, y'all. Like, things happen. We're not going there. But you cannot say the injuries have not mattered. You cannot say that they have not impacted TCU. It does not mean TCU is not good, but you can't have it both ways. Like, you can't. And look, let me say it. Max Duggan should be getting more consideration for Heisman candidate. Like, he should. Max Duggan's playing absolutely light out. I did see someone on Twitter be like, Max Duggan's the backup for TCU. And I really wanted to just, if I could backhand someone on Twitter, I would. Like, literally, he was a starter for the last, like, 3 years when he wasn't injured. And he came in, just whatever. Sure, he's the backup. Okay. Is Chandler Morris going to take the spot back when Chandler Morris is healthy? No, he's not, because that would be asinine. Max Duggan is a starter. He's playing like an absolute stud. He should be getting more credit. They should be getting talked about more. Looked great again, throwing for 280 yards and 3 TDs. Made some really heady and dynamic plays with his legs. Looked fantastic in that game. Duggan's been playing lights out. Quentin Johnson is cheat mode. That guy. Like, that, and it's taken them a while to finally, like, oh, it's like everyone in the country knew Quentin Johnson was awesome. They should get him the ball more. And they did, but they started doing it more and more and more. And you're like, sometimes it takes people a little bit to figure out the obvious when all the rest of us could see it. But now that they're actually throwing him the ball consistently, oh, man, he's going to get drafted this year, right? Like, we're not all going to have to put up with him for another year in the Big 12. Not that it's not enjoyable for every other Big 12 fan. It's just like, okay, this is unfair. Go away. But man, it's fun to watch. It's so good. And I'll give credit to the TCU defense. They make adjustments. They absolutely do. They make great halftime adjustments. DC, whose name continues to escape me, even though I followed his career at Tulsa and know he came from Tulsa and know him well. He's been doing a great job. They make excellent adjustments in the second half. The defense is playing really well. The corners, the safeties, the defensive backs are playing great. Like, TCU is playing really good football. Yes, they have had some injury luck benefit them, but they're still playing really good football. And I think they're going to be doing it. No, I will say it. They will be doing it in Arlington in December.
So there's something to be said. You talked about the injury luck that TCU perhaps has had. There's something to be said about good teams when they have lucky moments or lucky things happen to them, they take advantage. And there are plenty of teams who have played an opponent where injuries occur or where something happens that's fluky that creates an opportunity where they did not take advantage. And the fact that TCU now for four straight games has either played an opponent where the quarterback was injured or an opponent where the quarterback was banged up, they took advantage of those opportunities and won all four of those games. Three of them, they were really pressed. Kansas, with a backup quarterback, pressed TCU all the way to the end. Oklahoma State had a big lead against TCU. Kansas State had a big lead against TCU. And the odds are that TCU is not going to continue to come from behind as they have been the last couple of weeks if they continue to fall behind early in each of their games. But the schedule certainly lightens up, and it's unlikely that they will be pressed the way they have been the last couple of weeks. So it's a credit to them, a huge credit to TCU, that they took advantage of the opportunities they had to stay undefeated through a really tough portion of their schedule.
John, you've been running the numbers, and we'll post kind of some of the stuff on Twitter, as I mentioned. You've got projected win and losses for every Big 12 team from this point on. What do you see for TCU this year?
So I've got TCU at through the regular season at 10.69 projected wins. They're the only Big 12 team that has cracked that mark. That 10.69 obviously rounds up to 11. TCU I've got with a 61% chance of finishing the regular season with 11 or 12 wins. And if they finish with 11 or 12 wins going into the Big 12 title game, you can pencil them in as playing for a playoff spot. If they lose to Texas, that's their most likely loss left on the schedule. They are favored in that game. But if they lose that game, they would still be comfortable favorites against the rest of their teams. And by comfortable favorites, maybe 60 to 70% odds, because the Big 12 is just so deep. There are not games left on TCU's schedule where they are 90% odds to win. And that's just a testament to the depth of the Big 12, whereas some of the other Power 5 conferences, their playoff hopefuls have a few easy games left on the schedule. So TCU, even if they've gotten through two of their three most difficult games, there is still a gauntlet to run. That said, they are in a very comfortable spot, almost certainly playing for the Big 12 title. I've got them at essentially 89% odds of finishing the conference with conference play with two or less losses. And that should get you into the conference title game, and decent odds that they will be playing for the Big 12 title and a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, as far as postseason hopes go, I personally can't think of any time where finishing with Iowa State in conference has ever hurt a team that had high aspirations. So, oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting word that I shouldn't talk about that potentially on this show with this host. Oh, okay. All right.
That was a low.
I think that would be a callback to 2014. When TCU, despite a 55-3 win, dropped from 3 to 6 in the rankings. Unlikely.
I thought it was 2011 OSU Iowa State, yeah, which was the second to last week on a Friday night where Oklahoma State had to go to Ames and blew a lead and lost in overtime.
I was thinking finishing with Iowa State as, you know, doesn't matter win or lose. If you beat Iowa State, that should get you marching into the playoffs. And I remember a time when that was not the case for TCU.
Beating Iowa State does you no good. Losing to them only hurts. There's no benefit in playing Iowa State. Just get them off of your schedule. look,
not quit us, baby.
TCU schedule moving forward: at West Virginia, home for Texas Tech; at Texas, at Baylor, home for Iowa State. Here's the reason I think they're a lock. I don't think they're going to go undefeated. The Big 12 is too difficult. They're going to have a game where a team is able to play up and beat them. They get down and can't come all the way back. Okay. But here's the biggest thing. They now own the tiebreakers over the two teams most likely to meet them in Arlington, in Oklahoma State and Kansas State. From that standpoint, I think they have to miss Arlington. I think at this point they would have to lose three games. And barring an injury to their starting quarterback or a wave of injuries, I don't think that's not realistic expectation. Barring some unforeseen stuff, if things play out the way that they have, TCU's not losing three games. Could they lose two? Maybe. But you know, who knows? It can get weird out in West Virginia. You know, Texas Tech, I'm not going to overreact to week one. Texas at home, maybe it's a different animal than on the road. Quinn Ewers plays up. They got to go to Baylor. Baylor's not out of it. We'll talk about that in a minute. They're not losing three games the rest of the way, barring some crazy stuff that happens. So I think that at this point, I would call them, they're a lock for Arlington, and we'll see who they play. For TCU, also, we'll wrap on this. Did you all see what Homefield did? Put out a new TCU hoodie with a vintage TCU Horned Frog hoodie on Homefield did. It's awesome. It goes along with the Oklahoma State special release that came out this past weekend as well, which had the helmet with the throwback logo that OSU wore for homecoming on the shirt and on the hoodie. Like, and here's the crazy thing. Homefield emails me like Wednesday, like, hey, we've got an Oklahoma State special release, but we can't tell you anything else. We can't show it to you, and you're not allowed to tell anybody. Oklahoma State's got it on absolute lockdown. And I was like, okay. Thanks for the heads up. 2:15 on Saturday. Keep my eye out for that. And it's so good. The helmet's awesome. It's got the archback bucking Bronco, old school Oklahoma State cowboy logo. And it's got the helmet on the shirt. It's incredible. It's so good. The TCU hoodie is awesome. And both just fit with everything so good that Homefield puts out. And it's just like, oh, they already put OSU out. They already put TCU out. Okay, I guess I don't need anything. No. They'll continue to put out cool stuff that you're going to want to add to your collection. So if you have not bought from Homefield yet, first of all, what are you doing? Why have you not bought yet? Luckily for you, promo code NETWORK12, NETWORK12, gets you 15% off your first order. So it's okay if you've waited. Now is a great time, especially if you're a TCU or Oklahoma State fan, because you've just got two absolute must-haves added to those collections. And of course, they have every Big 12 school available, current and future. Future, of course, being BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. Go to Homefield Apparel, longest running sponsor here on the 1012 Podcast and 1012 Network. Don't do it just because we tell you. Don't do it just because they continue to support us, and we appreciate that immensely. Don't do it just because Connor and Whitney are really cool over there. Do it because their stuff is the most comfortable vintage college sports apparel you will ever put on your body. And fellas, if you've got a wife or a girlfriend who, like most wives and girlfriends, steals sweaters and hoodies, and I'm not a hoodie person, so I don't have to worry about it. I don't love sweaters, but I'm happy to give all that to my wife. You might want to go ahead and just buy two, so use that promo code. NETWORK12 for 15% off your first order. Be rocking the most comfortable vintage college sports apparel this football and basketball season.
I've also got to say, the TCU sweatshirt, the purple, really good. Again, not a visual medium, but it's been this way for a while. My hair has been purple for weeks now. I'm about it. I want the purple. I might just order the purple sweatshirt now that they just sell their stuff without logos as well.
Yeah, they sell without logos. And I might just buy a whole bunch of t-shirts. Yeah, let's buy a wave of t-shirts.
Welcome one, welcome all, and you are listening live to the one, the only Tortillas and Takes podcast.
From football to softball to track and field, tune in to get the best coverage in everything that is Texas Tech.
Not only that, but find out what unsuspecting star we get to interview and put on the hot seat.
Whether you like corn or flour, eating them or throwing them, this tortilla is for you. So listen to Tortillas and Takes.
And as always, stay wrecked, people.
Hey, this is Jamie Steyer-Johnson, host of the Cyclone Family Podcast. I host a show with my brother, Eric Steyer, and the two of us were raised in the ISU athletic department, as my mom has coached women's basketball for over 20 years. Our involvement didn't stop there, and I've been a radio analyst for Cyclone women's basketball since 2019, and Eric spent his 2018 to 2022 years as a walk-on on the men's side. We get together each week to talk about what's happening in the world of Cyclone sports, whether that be current seasons, former players, or whatever else we find to be of interest. We'd love to have you join us. The Cyclone Family Podcast. When you listen, you're family. Do you think Olive Garden can sue me for that?
Let's touch on a couple of the schools coming in real quick. Cincinnati's defense is legit. The offense is fine. Here's my problem with Cincinnati. Obviously, they almost blew a big lead against SMU this past weekend. Allowed SMU to score 13 unanswered points. Cincinnati hung on for a two-point win because SMU failed the two-point conversion right there at the end of the game. Cincinnati's defense is really good. My issue with Cincinnati is they don't put teams away often enough. They let teams hang out with them. Teams in the AAC, like SMU. Tulsa does it every year. We see this all the time. They'll beat teams by multiple touchdowns. But Cincinnati just doesn't blow teams out in the FBS. They just don't. And in the AAC, in a conference where I know they lost a lot, but they're still better than. And their defense is really good. But that offense is a little bit of an issue. And they've got a big one coming up this coming weekend. We'll obviously talk about it a little bit. With UCF, who's coming off of one heck of a loss. An absolute mess. We'll talk about just a second. But, like, Cincinnati has won 17 straight AAC games dating back to 2020. So you can't argue with it and say that what they're doing isn't successful. But it from a making picks on Thursday standpoint, I have a hard time with Cincinnati because I don't trust them. And the line was like 3.5, and I'm sitting here like, I'm going to be good. I'm going to get this win, and they win by 2. And I'm just like, I wish you'd just let Cincinnati get the two-point conversion so then you would have had to go down and score a touchdown to try and feel better. But no, they can survive with a two-point win and win and screw me, which is just freaking annoying. Again, I don't trust Cincinnati. They are good. There's no arguing that. I'm not going to play them. But I wish you could put teams away a bit more. I think that would be a thing that you might want to learn before you get to the Big 12, where you see how often we see comebacks. TCU, Oklahoma State. It happens. Just a heads up. Speaking of UCF, like I said, huge matchup that was going to be our Big 12 game of the week this week. It was. Cincinnati, UCF, Big 12 game of the 10-12 Big 12 game of the week. And I might still do it, but man, OSU Kansas State so big, especially since OSU won. The Butt Bowl has big implications, potentially for, at least for bowl eligibility, but potentially for the Big 12 title game. We'll talk about that. The UCF blasted at East Carolina. And look, just as I started to buy into the Citronauts and John Rhys Plumlee, here they come and screw up. Now, look, I love Parker's how bad we got beat tweet that he does like every Sunday. And you look at it and go, did we get crushed for real? Yes, your team got crushed for real. Here's what's funny. UCF. The score indicates they got destroyed. But they didn't. It was actually a fairly close game. Why is that? Because ECU only gained 32 more yards than UCF. That's it. But John Rhys Plumlee, the quarterback himself, turned the ball over 4 times. 3 interceptions and 1 fumble. 3 of those turnovers led directly to points for ECU. And the last one was on UCF's final drive of the game. But they didn't have enough time. Amount of comeback, but it sealed it for ECU because there was the interception, the game is over, we're all done. UCF's defense was a little bit disappointing because it's been played so well. It didn't quite show up, but man, when your offense just keeps putting you back on the field because you can't hang on to the ball. I don't know if it was a look-ahead spot for Cincinnati because they'll be hosting Cincinnati this week. It's a huge game for the AAC. As those two teams plus Tulane are the last three, I think, are really in contention for the AAC title game. Obviously, UCF, Cincinnati, future Big 12 schools, going to be paying attention to that one. Very disappointing for UCF to get blasted, to lose the way they did. I mean, and I know that the yards were close, but 4 turnovers. You didn't get it that bad, but you got beat. It wasn't close. Okay, another big game in the Big 12. Texas, Oklahoma State, OSU mounts a massive comeback. 17 points in the second half compared to 3 for Texas to pull off the homecoming come from behind win. I want to read through my notes as I wrote them down. Because the first half of this game, I sent out a tweet from my personal account. It just said the offensive play calling difference between Oklahoma State and Texas is stark. It is a stark difference. Someone said it was a Sark difference, which I thought was very funny. It was a very clever response to that. Thank you, Linda. That tweet both applies to the first half, when Sarkisian was calling just a brilliant game, and the second half, when he was not. It's just, you can view it either way. Still works. Just twist a little bit. Bijan Robinson is unfair. He gets better every week, I swear. I swear that it's like every time you tackle him, he gets better. Every week, he gets better. At the half, he had 14 touches for 134 total yards and 2 touchdowns, and Texas had a 7-point lead. Oklahoma State did everything they could in that first half to just not play well. You had a special teams turnover that I don't think actually touched him, but there was no camera angle that absolutely positively guaranteed that it didn't. So Texas got to keep the ball. You had Spencer Sanders. Blame the announcers. Spencer Sanders has completed 8 for 8 on this drive, and then he misses a wide open touchdown and then throws a pick in the end zone. Thanks, announcers. And even they're like, oh, we're going to get blamed for this one. Yes. Yes, you are. It is absolutely your fault. And then some, I don't know a better way to say it, piss poor clock management by Mike Gundy at the end of the half, and it leads to a missed field goal. And you're sitting there going, I mean, on the positive, as many mistakes as we made, we're still only down 7 points. On the other hand, like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? And yet, OSU is able to find a way in the second half to hold Texas to just 3 points. It's the program's fifth loss under Steve Sarkisian, where the Longhorns held a double-digit lead in the second half, including 3 times this season. It's the sixth loss when leading in the fourth quarter, and brings Sark's record on the road, true road games, to 1-6. They've got road issues. They've got second half issues. They have not quite gone away so far this year. Quinn Ewers, who I believe Tom Fornelli said was the best quarterback in college football just a few weeks ago, is one of now only 3 quarterbacks since 2000 to attempt 49-plus pass attempts in a game and complete less or fewer than 20. That is from at @collegefb_ref. That is not ideal. He was 11 of 24 in the first half, 8 of 25 in the second half. Not great by Quinn. Here's the one people are going to want to talk about. Texas 119, Oklahoma State 0. That's not the score. It's the penalty yards. Longhorns were called for 14 penalties, OSU for 0. Now, technically, the Cowboys were flagged twice, one that was declined and another that was negated because of an offsetting penalty on Texas. Now, before you call bias and the refs are unfair to the teams that are leaving, and so this cost us the game, though Gundy did say it had a major...
Spare me.
Hold up. And Gundy did say it after the game. Was like, yeah, it had an impact. Texas fans, you only won because of the penalties. Gundy, I mean, yeah, thanks. We still won. Before you call bias, and shout out to our good friend Cade Webb of the Oklahoma State podcast here on the network, Feels Like 45. 9 of Texas's 14 penalties were pre-snap. That's not subjective pass interference or holding calls. They're pre-snap. 9 of 14 are pre-snap. That's not judgmental. That's not like it could have been.
That the objective things they do are being called because they're not used to that happening.
You know, sometimes coaching is often cited as why a team incurs lots of pre-snap penalties. You got to wonder if that's something that, you know, Sark takes credit for down in Austin, or takes the fall for the fact that they, you know, I'm a Cowboy fan, and last year the narrative for the Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys, they had so many penalties, and their coaches just got blistered for allowing their team to commit all of these penalties. And, you know, I wonder if that's the kind of thing that turns up the heat on Coach Sark down in Austin a little bit. The fact that, you know, this is not the first game this year where the Longhorns have had substantial pre-snap penalties. That have put them in a tough spot. I think the other couple of games, I think that happened to them in Lubbock, where they lost. They had some pre-snap penalties out there. I think they won the other couple of games where that was more prevalent. But yeah, it's definitely something that you see come back to the coaching often. And you got to wonder, is that because of the coaching, or is that because of the youth of the Longhorns? They've got so many freshmen playing. Young underclassmen, is that something that just matures with time, where they continue to get playing time, they continue to grow in a hostile road environment where that doesn't happen as often?
No, I think it's a great point. And I do think you have to put some on coaching. because like that's the kind of stuff you should be prepping for. I do think Oklahoma State during homecoming, there's a reason they don't lose at homecoming very often. That place is raucous and rowdy and loud. And I do think home crowd can have an impact when they get loud enough. But youth plays a factor as well. I would be curious at the end of the year, after a few weeks, to compare Texas's penalties road versus home and see what that looks like, because I think that would play into the youth a lot if they're having more issues on the road than at home. Obviously, coaching staff's going to be working on that, but youth on the road, it matters. It does. It's tough to play in tough places, and the Big 12 this year, everyone's selling out every game, like left, right, and sideways. Everyone's talking about sellouts. Tickets are impossible to find. Fans are rabid and ravid. They are excited this year, and all the negativity that's been spewed at the Big 12 for the last year plus, because Oklahoma and Texas leaving and the rest of these eight, and blah, 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 blah. Big 12 fans are like, screw you. We're going all in. We're going to show you how loyal and how big of college football fans we are. We aren't, first of all, obviously it's not California, so we don't have other things to go and do, so we're not going to use that as a bullshit excuse. But obviously, we care about our teams and we're going to continue. I'm cursing more on this episode than usual. Pardon me, sorry. I feel like I'm just kind of on a roll. For OSU, halftime adjustments on defense were huge. The Longhorns put up 31 combined points, 351 yards, and an average of 8.6 yards per play in the first two quarters. Here's the thing, though. Texas had 227 of those 351 yards in the first half came on 10 plays. Some huge, huge rushing plays from Bijan and Roshan, which is a fun... Bijan Roshan. That's a fun two names to say together back-to-back like that. Try and do it without losing your place like I just did and had to stop myself. Texas in the second half, 3 points. Like they just... Oklahoma State's defense made the necessary adjustments, and they made the plays. And credit to Derek Mason and credit to Oklahoma State. And look, credit to the offense. At one point, the deep Oklahoma State receiving core, we've talked about it, is deep. They don't necessarily have that is the guy at the top, but it's a deep one. They were down to just 5 scholarship players available during that game because they had multiple injuries coming into the game. And they had 6 starters out coming into this game. That's why I was like, here we go. And they found a way to pull it out. We talked about injuries earlier. Like, can you take advantage of that? Texas did not take advantage of the injuries that Oklahoma State had on the offensive line, at receiver, and defense. OSU had one of their impact defensive linemen go ahead and call it a career at Oklahoma State during the week. Texas couldn't find a way. OSU was able to do it despite all that. Now, here's my one thing. Oklahoma State's run game, I don't care what happens, continues to struggle. It's been an issue all season. It's not great. It's not good. It's just not. No offense to Dominic Richardson. He's doing his best. Whether it's the offensive lines, the play calling, or it's Dom, it's not quite working. Now, Richardson went out with an injury, and Jaden Nixon came in, started in his place, had a 51-yard run from scrimmage. It was very impressive. Broke some tackles, carried some Texas defenders. It was the longest run from scrimmage by an Oklahoma State running back against FBS competition this season by 32 yards. Your hope from this point is maybe Jaden Nixon, Ollie Gordon, 2 young guys who came in, are finally getting ready to take over this running back group and this backfield. Because if you're Oklahoma State, look, you can say, well, Spencer Sanders isn't playing well. The run game ain't cutting it, and Spencer Sanders is having to do everything. And so I don't care right now if his numbers aren't impressive enough to you. He is having to do everything, and he's doing it fairly well. I hope he's going to be in an ice bath for a week, the number of hits and hard hits he took from Texas on Saturday. Props to Oklahoma State for getting this win. Big win at halftime. All right, big win at homecoming for Oklahoma State. It keeps them in the race for Big 12 title game and sets up a massive game in Manhattan this weekend, which we'll obviously talk about. I'll end on this note. This is fantastic. An answer mentioned that receiver Brennan Presley is dating offensive coordinator Casey Dunn's daughter, Lauren, and Presley had to ask for permission and was granted it. That is the kind of perfect nugget you want to hear from your announcers in the middle of a football game.
And don't worry, they made sure we knew. Because that was the tag that every time he was involved in a play. It's a good fun fact, but it's tired.
It was a long game. The game started at 2:30, and my girls were up late. They go to bed at 7. My girls were up late because the game hadn't ended yet. And
every
it didn't go
Big
into
12
overtime.
Game has been long this year. They're so long. My attention span does not work that way.
I'll tell you, Baylor and Kansas ran through. It was done hours before some of the other early games on Saturday. Most Big 12 games are long. That one was not.
It was not. Before we move on, you guys got any other thoughts on OSU or Texas and their performance this weekend?
Yeah.
Could someone just please get those poor Longhorns some five-star players so they can start to win? I saw a stat that they had some coaching change. There's so much similar between Texas and Texas A&M where they change coaches and they bring in new highly touted coaches who are supposed to change the culture and make things different, and then it turns out the exact same as before. Texas has so many high caliber players coming in. They've got what should be a really strong coaching staff, and I think 20 games in now of the Steve Sarkisian tenure, they're 10-10, and that's worse than Tom Herman, better than, gosh, who was their previous coach?
Charlie Strong.
I think he was 9-11 in his first 20. Tom Herman was either 13-7 or 12-8. And then Sark is 10-10 now in his first 20 games. And, it's like the same stat I keep seeing for Jimbo Fisher over at Texas A&M, where it's like, here's Jimbo in his first however many games he's played. And, it's like the same record or one game worse than Kevin Sumlin, who they fired because he wasn't good enough. And so it's like, Texas should be so good. And yet there are a few games every year that they find a way to lose when they shouldn't. Texas Tech, one of those this year. They play so well. And some of their losses against some of the best teams that they play, Alabama this year, qualifies. I heard one person say that if you questioned whether, if you had a healthy Quinn Ewers, you might have beaten Alabama and Texas Tech. Maybe Oklahoma State is evidence that those are not guaranteed wins with you are still in. He made so many great throws on Saturday where if you go back and you just look at the highlight plays of the game on offense for Texas, he looks like a five-star caliber stud. And then the rest of the throws he made him look like a freshman. And so I think there's still some growing pains with Texas, but you certainly, even in a loss against Oklahoma State, you see the potential that a new coaching staff with high caliber talent brings. It'll be interesting to see if that manifests into a dominant team before Texas leaves the Big 12.
I'll say this for Texas. It does feel like they are improving. They are better than last year. I think you had to deal with a lot of stuff that Tom Herman left. Tom Herman couldn't develop crap. I've done this rant of Tom Herman should not be allowed to coach college football again because he did every single player he brought to Austin an absolute disservice by ruining their career by not making a single one of them any better than the day they showed up. Tom Herman screwed every single one of those kids up. This Texas team does seem like it's getting better. It still has flaws, it still has issues, and it is very young. Now, that offensive line is playing way better than we thought it would as young as it is. Quinn Ewers shows the potential. He is technically in his freshman season. This is his first year starting in college. He left a year high school early. This should be his true freshman season. If you look at how old he is, he skipped his senior season of high school to go to Ohio State and didn't do anything. He took the check. Awesome props to him. Now he's at Texas in what should be his true freshman season playing, making plays that are incredible. And as we saw on Saturday, making freshman mistakes. If he continues to develop into the guy that makes those awesome plays more often than not, this very talented offensive line that's playing exceptionally well for a bunch as many freshmen as they have on it continues to develop and get older. We talk about Texas all the time and the potential, but it's more that you can see the potential in this team, whereas in the past it was always, well, look at what they are on paper. And we saw that a lot. We talked about how good they were on paper and that being their potential. I think we're actually seeing some of the potential, but this is a young team that had to kick a lot of guys off from last year, has made a lot of changes. They're trying to fix this locker room. I do think culture matters. Some coaches just say it as a buzzword. Some mean it. If this team wins, finds a way to win 8 games, they're 5-3. They got 4 games left on the schedule. If they find a way to go 3-1 and finish 8-4, that is a that is progress this year based off of what happened last year. The rest of their schedule, now that's gonna be tough. It's absolutely gonna be tough. After their week off, they will go to Kansas State, then host TCU, go to Kansas, and host Baylor. 3-1 is not a given. It's not gonna be easy. Like, I can see 3-1 because of the potential that's there. I could see 2-2. I could see 1-3. Like, just Jalen Daniels back for Kansas. Baylor's not as bad as their record implies. You got to go to Kansas State. You host TCU. Like, it could be a really nice end of the season. And we're talking about Texas very positively heading into next year, or it could kind of be a disappointing end of the year. And we say a lot of what could have been, well, they almost lost, beat Alabama. Well, cool. Tennessee did. I mean, A&M almost beat Alabama. Congratulations, Texas and Texas A&M. That is what you have in common. You both almost beat Alabama this year. Here's your gold star. So we'll see what happens to them. Oh, yeah. Let's go to BYU led 14-3 before Liberty ripped off 38 straight points. I don't want to talk about this game because I'm not going to talk about Liberty. They don't deserve airtime beyond this. BYU, you got some things to figure out because you're healthy, and that's just not a good year. West Virginia and Texas Tech. So what's interesting is we mentioned Parker's how bad you got beat tweet. Baylor beat Kansas worse than West Virginia beat Texas Tech, despite what the score implies. When you turn the ball over multiple times, it makes a closer game look worse, right? You're playing because that it is. You can't calculate when making projections on a game by saying, well, there's going to be this many turnovers. That doesn't go. Correct me if I'm wrong here, John. People always be like, Parker gets this, and a lot of people do. Like, here's my projected outcome of the game. Like, Bill Connolly does it. Parker does it. A lot of people do. And it's like, well, the final score wasn't anything like that, so you're an idiot. It's like, that's not how it works. You can't account for potential injuries. You can't account for turnovers. You can't account for special teams touchdowns. You can't account for things that happen in college football that make college football the way it is. So it's why when we have these kinds of conversations and say, you weren't beat as badly as the final score indicates, we said it with UCF-ECU. The game, from a statistical standpoint, was close, except UCF turned the ball over 4 times. That had the impact, but you can't pre-calculate that into predictions. Same thing here with West Virginia-Texas Tech. West Virginia, JT Daniels turned the ball over 3 times. Like, look, Texas Tech still won this game. It's not like I'm not saying that they didn't beat West Virginia quite soundly. But when you turn the ball over multiple times, it can make a game look far worse, you know, score-wise, than it actually was statistically.
Relativity goes beyond just points scored and points against you.
Correct.
I'll say that Texas Tech was a favorite in that game. I had them as a projected winner. And so in some respect, even if there are turnovers, even if there are weird things that happen, just looking at overall yardage also doesn't always tell the whole story. I think if you were looking at a win probability chart throughout the game, you know, Texas Tech jumped out to the quick 14-0 lead. And I think from there on to the end of the game, they had between, you know, at least an 80% probability of winning that game to 100% whenever they wrapped it up. I think they were up to 99% shortly after halftime. You could say from a yardage standpoint, West Virginia moved the ball a lot more than they did score, perhaps. But also that game was hardly in doubt for the vast majority. And so, you know, while looking at yardages tells you whether or not a team had the potential to be in a game, that's kind of how I look at it. Could you have been in the game if you had executed at the key moments? That tells you a lot of the story, but then the lack of execution leads to a decisive and dominant victory by Texas Tech in this one. And it's the same reason why Baylor, if you look at the data that Parker had, perhaps beat Kansas worse than Texas Tech beat West Virginia from that perspective. But also, Baylor made so many mistakes that allowed Kansas to put that game into doubt later into the game, to where, you know, really it was a much closer game than that specific yardage-centric metric would tell you. And yardages, you know, things like that don't always account for all of the big plays. Like Kansas returns a fumble to the 9-yard line and then goes and scores, they'll get 9 yards of credit for a return that covered, I think, around 40 to 50 yards of space. And so yardages also don't always account for the differential you pick up on those turnover plays.
There we go. For West Virginia, like, I know West Virginia fans are down bad right now. Obviously, they're done with Neil Brown. I don't think he's getting fired. That buyout is I think it's still around 20 right now. It's $16 million at the end of the season, unless someone really wants to pony up some money. That's a lot to spend when your TV contract is, yes, a slight bump, but, you know, probably not the best way to spend your dollars if you're not getting an SEC or a Big Ten paycheck. Here's the thing for West Virginia. We said it in the offseason. I'll stand by it. I'm glad I said it. West Virginia's defense was, or offense was going to be better. It was. And I still think it is. The ground game has been awesome. It's the one prop for Texas Tech. The thing that shocked me is West Virginia's ground game is good, and they got CJ Donaldson back. And Texas Tech has had the 9th worst rushing defense in the Big 12. And Texas Tech did a really good job against West Virginia's rushing defense or rushing attack. Now, granted, part of that is you get up 14-0 and your offensive game plan is going to shift to pass throwing the ball a whole lot more than running the ball when you're down big. So that did play an impact in that. But props to Texas Tech. I do think they did a very good job against West Virginia's ground game, which is not something they had been doing up to this point. Now, West Virginia's defense. For the second straight game, the West Virginia defense gave up nearly 600 yards of offense for the season. Teams are averaging 405 yards a game against West Virginia. That includes Towson and Virginia Tech in those metrics. If you take those two out, it's 487 yards per game. Against the Big 12, it's almost 513 yards per game. It's not good. And we know the secondary is not good for West Virginia. And this was the big concern coming into the year was, can the offense make up for what the defense will have lost? And I had lots of West Virginia fans griping at me about, no, it's going to be fine. They've got all these guys that developed, and they pulled in all these transfers. They're all FCS guys. They're going to be fine. This defense is going to just keep on rolling. And it's not. It's not remotely rolling. It's quite not good. Look, for West Virginia, I don't know. I don't think you're going bowling. I just don't. And I don't want to be like negative about it, but look, there's just the odds do not stack in your favor. Seeing how West Virginia's playing, you got the big win over Baylor, and then you followed up with the performance against Texas Tech. Your last 5 games of the season are TCU, at Iowa State, Oklahoma, Kansas State, and at Oklahoma State. You have the 3 teams sitting atop the conference standings left on the schedule, plus a road game against the best defense in the Big 12 at Iowa State, and an Oklahoma team you've never beaten since you joined the Big 12. And I know Oklahoma's down, isn't great right now, but you need 3 wins in those 5 games. Name the 3. Like, confidently name me the 3. Realistically, don't come up with some insanity. Like, name the 3 right now that West Virginia would win. And I think most West Virginia fans are going to agree with me. And I hate it because, again, my hope this year, as good as the Big 12 is that we'd have, like, 9 or 10 bowl teams. My fear now is, unless West Virginia just, like, loses out, we're going to end up with, like, 4 or 5 win teams, which is going to be really annoying. And it's going to be like, well, Big 12, I'm much deep, and I want 6 wins for everybody. John, I mean, I don't think West Virginia's going to a bowl game. I don't think it's a realistic expectation. What are your numbers showing as far as win projections and bowl percentages?
So just looking at the next 5 games on West Virginia's schedule, the odds of them winning any 3 of those in combination, 13.8%. So you're saying 13.8% odds of going bowling. Your most likely wins over that stretch are right now Oklahoma 39.8% win probability, Iowa State 37% win probability, Kansas State 30% win probability. If they beat TCU, which is very unlikely, maybe a less than 20% odds that they beat TCU, but it can happen. TCU has allowed other teams to play with them for several weeks now. You're still only going to be at a 37% probability of going bowling, because that is just, it is the depth of the Big 12. You know, you picked up an unlikely win against Baylor. You lost to Texas. You lost to Texas Tech. Neither of those games were particularly close. And so it just kind of leaves you in this tough spot where there is not an easy game, especially for West Virginia. You know, you get 9 conference games as West Virginia, and those 9 conference games are against the 7th strongest team in the nation, the 8th strongest team, 12, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, and 41. So you're playing 9 games against top 41 teams in a system where half, so about 65 teams, 66 teams, I think, go bowling this year. Somewhere in the mid-60s. I forget how many bowl games there are. They're always taking away or creating a few new ones. But you're essentially playing 10 bowl caliber teams on your schedule with Pitt in non-conference. And so in a lot of other conferences, West Virginia is not struggling to make a bowl game as they are right now in the Big 12. It's the depth of the Big 12 going against West Virginia, and really makes it hard for them to make any progress or make it somewhere this year. They are not a bad team. They just are in a really deep conference.
We talked about this before we started recording. Like, if West Virginia is in the ACC, some of the teams there, like, I think they're going bowling. I think if West Virginia is in the Pac-12, I think they're going bowling. And so, like, that's how tough the Big 12 is this year. If they're in the Big 10 and they get the schedule, they're in the West? is it the West or the East? I don't remember, and I don't care. It's the one side's good and one side's not. If you're in the bad side of the Big Ten, they might go bowling. Like, I think West Virginia is a good team, and that's what stinks for West Virginia fans right now, is they're like, we're done with Neil Brown, and it's not a bad team. You just have an incredibly difficult schedule, and you don't do yourselves any favors. I know you're very proud of the non-conference slate of playing 2 Power Fives, and I love that you're playing, you know, you played Pitt and Virginia Tech, 2 rivals. That's awesome. And I think for West Virginia, what stinks the most is, like, you should have beat Pitt, and you were close to doing it. And it's tough. You could have beat Kansas, and you couldn't get it out. And so you're sitting here as West Virginia, you're like, we're done with Neil Brown. And I don't think Neil Brown's a bad coach. I don't think this is a bad team. I think this is a rough year where the Big 12 is really good, and there's no easy win on the schedule. There's just not, or two. And sometimes we have Kansas being a nice, easy win. And sometimes we have 2 teams that are bad. And West Virginia is the worst team in the Big 12. And that's not even like Kansas most years. That's still a good team. It's still going to be a tough team to beat. And it wouldn't shock me if they pulled off one more win this season. There's no way they're getting to 3.
Yeah. If West Virginia replaced North Carolina in the ACC Coastal, and if they drew Boston College as a cross divisional team, they would have been favored in 5 of their ACC games and would have rated stronger than 5 of those ACC teams, including Virginia Tech, who they beat badly at Virginia Tech this year. So evidence is that may not be unfounded. So if you pick up 5 of those wins, you beat Towson, you have another non-conference opponent to replace Virginia Tech because you have been in conference with Virginia Tech. You're a 6-win team. Perhaps if you pick up 1 or 2 extra wins, you're maybe 7-5 or even 8-4. And you're thinking of this as a fantastic season for West Virginia. And everyone's happy with Neil Brown. You're happy with your new quarterback. You're thinking he's awesome. You know, everything about the season is different if you are not in a conference that is incredibly deep where you happen to be the worst of those 10 teams.
Just insane. Just nuts. Big 12 is, it's the deepest this year. It's not close. It's not remotely close. It's not an argument. It's not a debate. It's not just the most fun conference. It is the deepest. People keep saying it like it's a lot of fun. It is fun. It's deep. Respect it for being deep. Respect it for how good the bottom of this conference is, and that the top is better than I think it gets credit for. No. None of these teams are Georgia or Ohio State. They're just not. They're not Bama. But they named 3 teams in the country. Like, okay. All right. Clemson's defense is really good. The offense is fine. And let's talk USC. Like, it's Oklahoma. hey, look how good the offense is. The defense is terrible. So how good are they? Okay. I think that about wraps up last week.
You do have Baylor and Kansas play. We haven't talked about them yet.
Sorry. We mentioned the game. Here's the Baylor conversation I want to have. Kansas, they're going to get an idle week. They need it. They need to get Jalen Daniels back. Expectation is he'll be back after the week off when they host Oklahoma State in 2 weeks. Oh, shoot, man. This four-game stretch is just... Which, by the way, the four-game stretch ends the following week by hosting Iowa State, who's the best defense in the Big 12 and just can't quite seem to get past all these, like, 1-2-3-point losses. So it's not like that is an easy game for OSU to come off of a four-game stretch that include at TCU, Texas, at Kansas State, at Kansas. Big 12, there are no weeks off. Football and men's and women's basketball, folks. That's just how it rolls. But for Baylor, this win does this. And here's, last week I said there are four teams still in contention for the Big 12 title game. I still feel that is most strongly about that. But I will say this. Baylor is not out of it. Technically, they are not. That's how I want to have this Baylor conversation. Because this coming week, we'll do our which game we're most excited about. But the Butt Bowl is this week. It's Baylor and Texas Tech. And you'd say, well, both those teams are 4-3 and have two losses in conference play. They're both still title game contenders. Texas Tech is not. I don't care what they did against West Virginia. That was a great game. That's awesome. Baron Morton is very going to be lots of fun for Texas Tech and a nightmare for everybody else. His performances so far in last week and then how he looked before he got banged up against Oklahoma State. Baron, I don't care what happens when Shutt comes back. You might just want to roll with Baron Morton because he seems like the hot hand. But Texas Tech has already lost to Oklahoma State and Kansas State. If you've lost two games against any of the other contenders at the top of the conference, you're out. I'm eliminating you unless some insanity happens. Baylor's lost to OSU. They still have TCU, Texas, and Kansas State on the schedule. So, they are still in contention because their other loss is West Virginia. Remember last year, they lost to OSU. That didn't hurt them. They beat Oklahoma. That was great. They lost to TCU. It didn't hurt them because it wasn't a tiebreaker situation. So, they've got the Butt Bowl on the road, followed by a road game at Oklahoma. They host Kansas State and TCU in Waco, and they end the season in Austin against Texas. Baylor is not out of it. I'm not putting them back in yet. I would put them, if we were going to do this in tiers, I'd still have TCU, OSU, and Kansas State, and then I'd have Texas in that group still. I know they took a second loss, but again, only one is to one of the other contenders. Their other loss is to Texas Tech, and they still have TCU and Kansas State on the schedule. And they get a week off before they have to face Kansas State, who has to play OSU before they turn around and play Texas. So, like, in the next few weeks, nothing is decided yet. That group of four is still the group of four, I think. But
I think that's accurate. The group of four is the group of four. There are only four teams with better than, 9% odds of finishing the season with two or less conference losses. I think this year, given the depth of the conference, a team with two or less losses in Big 12 play has an extremely strong chance to make it to Arlington and without tiebreakers. So for Texas Tech versus Baylor, one of the two of them being in contention, it's not the tiebreaker scenario. Neither one of them are likely to make it through a tiebreaker of three lost teams, because that would be a deep tiebreaker system. Texas Tech certainly not going to make it through with the losses they've taken. So it's really whether or not they can make it through the season with two losses. Can either of those two teams win out? Texas Tech has five games left on the schedule. Four of those are going to be almost coin flips, less than 60% probability of winning. But right now, four games, I have them as the favorite, including Baylor this week. 55.6% win probability for Texas Tech at home. The only game that they are not projected to win by me at the moment is, of course, TCU. On November 5th on the road. That's very hard to win. But if they pulled that upset, Baylor, Kansas, Iowa State, Oklahoma, they're not playing the top tier teams in the Big 12. If someone was going to get hot and make a run, they are more likely to do that than Baylor is. I think Baylor on paper is a better team. I think the only reason Texas Tech is favored in my data is because they're at home. Actually, I think if Baylor was at home, Baylor would be a minor favorite as well. So that game is a coin flip within home field advantage in our data. But Baylor's got Kansas State, TCU, Texas, three of the four, what we think are powerhouse contenders. The odds of Baylor making it through that stretch without taking a third conference loss are almost minuscule, less than a percent chance that they finish with two or less conference losses on the season. So while you might think Baylor is the better team, the fact that they dropped that game to West Virginia on the road really tanks their odds of making it to Arlington.
Yeah, I'm not putting them in for a few weeks until they do something to change my mind. I think a good way to sum up what you just said, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, is Texas Tech's schedule is easier down the stretch and they have a higher projected win total for the season because of that versus Baylor, whose schedule is more difficult. But why I keep Baylor in contention and not Texas Tech is because Baylor has the two games left against three of the four teams we consider contenders. They kind of control their destiny more than Texas Tech does because they've already played. Well, they have the win over Texas. They've already lost to Oklahoma State and to Kansas State. And we do have to consider tiebreaker scenarios the way the season is playing out. And with those with that in consideration, I'm not putting Texas Tech in. Again, unless some insanity happens. And that would include them basically winning out the rest of the season, which would be quite a thing to see. That said, Baylor and Texas Tech, whoever loses that game this weekend, they're done. Like, I'm eliminating them completely. That includes Baylor. I don't have Texas Tech in consideration for the Big 12 title game, but if they lose it, that's a third loss. We're done. Because TCU is undefeated, because you have two one-loss teams right now, I know there was the, like, we could have a three-loss team in the Big 12 title game. Maybe. But it seems slightly less likely now than it did maybe a few weeks ago. So, I mean, the Butt Bowl is big. I think it's a elimination game for sure for both of those teams.
I think the bigger thing for these two teams are the challenge of sweating out a bowl game, getting it to a bowl game. Baylor right now, 4-3. Win would be 5-3. They'd have an 86% chance of making it to a bowl game. That's not something you thought before the season Baylor would be sweating out.
No.
But given the shaky road loss to BYU, the surprising road loss to West Virginia, and now Baylor with a tough finishing schedule, if they don't go and win in Lubbock, they're 50-50 odds of missing a bowl game. Texas Tech, same thing. They're 4-3. They have an easier schedule coming down the stretch. If they win this game, they're 5-3, 94% chance pretty much to make a bowl game, just to win one of their remaining four. 67% chance if they lose this game. So both teams, this is the biggest game of the week in conference in terms of swinging bowl odds, bowl eligibility odds, one way or the other. For Texas Tech, making a bowl game in the first year of Joey McGuire is huge for the program and for building forward in a really deep and challenging conference. For Baylor, year three of Dave Aranda, things seemed so bright after last year winning the conference, top 10 preseason. If they missed a bowl game, that would be huge for the program. It'd be a huge setback for the momentum they've been building. So I think that is the second biggest game in the Big 12, only because of the program building ramifications for both teams if things go their way.
That's getting clipped. That was a nice little sound bite for me. This is the biggest game in the Big 12 for bowl implication than just la 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 numbers stats. That was, well, thank you, John. You just gave me a nice click on the post. Hey, Vibes, what you thinking?
Numbers are good. Like those. I don't have anything more intelligent to add than that.
All right.
I'm so running out of brain power.
All right.
This Jamie is probably the longest episode we've ever done.
No, it's we've
pretty close.
We've had hour and a half long episodes. We're not there yet. Okay, well, let's wrap on this because we are going long. I thought we would. We had a lot to get to. I'm sorry we kind of glazed over Kansas Baylor. My takeaways are Baylor needed the win. Kansas still looking for a sixth win. Jalen Daniels needs to come back. Okay, we got four games this weekend. Well, seven games this weekend. We'll include the three future B12 teams as we do. So we need to talk about which one we are most excited for. Obviously, in the Big 12, we've got Oklahoma State at Kansas State, a huge one for Big 12 title game. Tiebreaker scenario situation. We've got Oklahoma on the road at Iowa State, both those teams coming off of an idle week, both teams needing wins to get to bowl eligibility. A TCU on the road at West Virginia. The Butt Bowl, as we have talked about quite a bit here. We said UCF, Cincinnati, potential 10-12 Big 12 game of the week, still considering it. BYU hosting East Carolina on Friday, and Houston hosting quite awful South Florida on Saturday as well. Jamie, so you can get out of here because I know you're tired and your brain is shutting down, and I understand that. Jamie, which game are you most excited about this week? And you know the rule, you cannot pick your own game.
Yeah. I'll say I'm most interested in Oklahoma State, Kansas State. There's obviously implications for the both of them wanting to stick around atop the standings as far as conference goes. Having it be at Kansas State adds a little bit of intrigue there with them, you know, their current status lagging a little bit behind Oklahoma State nationally. But I will just kind of have to catch the highlights of anything good that happens. I'm going to be at a wedding Saturday. So hopefully they can cut them down pretty good for me.
You know, does there no Wi-Fi? You just put the reception, put the phone out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch some, but like I'm gonna be an attendant for my friend, so I'm gonna be hopefully running around for her. Busy. Actually, I volunteered my husband to run errands and stuff too, so hopefully I will just be dictating.
Marriage. John, which game are you most excited about this weekend?
I think the easy answer is Oklahoma State and Kansas State. Big ramifications for the conference, which is what we care about. You could say TCU continuing to win just to stay relevant nationally is big, because we're kind of whittling down the number of teams who are not powerhouse Big Ten or SEC teams that people care about nationally. It'd be nice to see someone from the Big 12 represented in those national discussions as the committee starts putting out rankings here in a few weeks. You know, in the ACC, you know, Cincinnati, UCF could have been exciting, but doesn't really carry any national ramifications. Both teams had already taken losses before UCF lost again last week. So I think I'm going to have to stick with the Oklahoma State Kansas State game as the most exciting. Not sure what the quarterback situation is going to be for Kansas State, if they're playing their third string quarterback or if neither their top two guys are back healthy next week. That could be a dud of a game. But yeah, until Kansas State announces their depth chart for that game, that will remain the most exciting game going into next week.
Yep. I get it. It makes a lot of sense. Cincinnati UCF just from an AAC title game and potential New Year's Six bowl game situation is interesting. I do feel like if Cincinnati and Tulane continue on the run that they are on, the winner of that potential 2-1-loss teams AAC title game, winner of that going to the New Year's Six bowl as the P5 or the G5 representative. I don't see anybody else from the G5. I know Liberty's 7. At this point, they ain't played anybody, and I don't care. Liberty. Blech. Tulane's playing well. Cincinnati's playing well. We'll see on that one. It's the Butt Bowl for me. Like I do think, because again, I can't pick OSU Kansas State. That's fine. It's my rule. But I do think this Butt Bowl is really interesting. This Baylor Texas Tech matchup is big. Baylor's still, based off tiebreaker rules, still technically in contention for the Big 12 title game. They've got a lot of work to do, and they got a difficult schedule. This is a big one. It's a rivalry game. It's going to be on the road. Their secondary has been susceptible, and Baron Morton has looked good for Texas Tech in the two games that we have seen him in. I think this is a tough spot for Baylor, and it's a big opportunity for them. I think it's, like, I know you talked about the numbers as far as bowl game. Yeah, Baylor going from year one the way that the career started for Randa to winning the Big 12 title to missing a bowl game the next year would be ridiculous and insane, and definitely not something any of us would have predicted coming into the season. For Tech, I mean, I said the biggest thing that they could do is get back to a bowl game and not take a step back in year one under McGuire. We believe this is a program that is building. We believe that it's growing. It's aiming towards something. They're going to keep getting better. If they can get back to a bowl game this year, or heck, if they could get 7 wins in the regular season, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility with the way the schedule stacks up for them the rest of the way, they're at 4 wins. A lot of the teams they got to face the rest of the way are the other teams at the bottom of the conference standings with Iowa State and Oklahoma. This is a big game for both these teams for how this season could play out for them. I'm very interested in it. It's the only night game for the Big 12. It's 6:30 on ESPN2. So it's an easy one to just sit and turn on and tune into unless you want to go watch whatever's going on in the Big 10. I don't give a crap. So, I'm going to have it on. I'm very intrigued. Obviously, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, huge one for tiebreaker stuff for title game. It just is. That one team will have a second loss in conference. If you're OSU, the big thing for, I've said, if you lose 2 games to the other contenders, you're probably out of it. For OSU, you've already lost, both these teams have lost TCU. This is a situation where if the loser of this has to hope that the other team drops 2 more. Like, that's just, if you're Kansas State and you win, you're OSU, like, you hope Kansas State loses 2 more games, because it's going to be tough. And so this is a big game. This is a very big game for putting yourself in a spot to go to Arlington for OSU to be return trip from last year for Kansas State. It would be the first time since the Big 12 title game came back, and we've talked about this ad nauseum every year since the Big 12 title game came back. A team has made it for the first time since it came back. Kansas State would be a first-time appearance team. OSU made it last year. TCU made it in year 1. That's why I like Kansas State. It's one of those weird things where I'm like, I like Kansas State to get there. And they're sitting in a spot where they potentially could. So big games in the Big 12. Every single week there's a game that matters. That one's at 2:30 on Fox. The Big 12 seems to be dominating this 2:30 kickoff time on ABC and Fox. I love it. Keep big games there. It's fine. I don't care if there's some marquee SEC game on CBS. Keep giving the Big 12's big games an opportunity to showcase themselves. I look forward to seeing the TV numbers. We are the 1012 Podcast. You can follow us and the whole network on Twitter at 1012 Network, T-E-N, the number 12, the word network, 1012network.com. You'll find every show on the network. Go and check them all out. Jamie, who has already left, you'll find her on Twitter at jstyz, J-S-T-E-Y-Z. Don't forget to check out the Cyclone Family Podcast, which is her Iowa State show. Andy, of course, should be back next week. You can check him out at AndyMitts12, M-I-T-T-S, and the Rock Chalk Podcast, his show here on the network. Go and follow John on Twitter. That is at CFP Resume Ranks. Go check out his site. We'll continue to share his information and data on our Twitter feed as well. And I'm going to figure out how to do it on Instagram, but I've taken a break from Instagram because I don't have a ton of time to make really pretty graphics, even though it's fun to do. It doesn't pay the bills. John, man, I appreciate you joining us this week. We're going to continue to have you as a regular contributor here on the show, and do appreciate you kind of joining us as our official, unofficial stats guy here, bud.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Love talking college football. I do it every day.
We'll be back on Thursday to make picks for this week's games. We will talk to you then.